is that in a healthy democracy, we have to challenge the government. We have to ask questions. We have to be able to have open and respectful dialogue.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Freedom Features. Continue my conversation with Eva Chepiak, who has organized a group called Empowered Canadians. She was also involved in representing the truckers at the Freedom Convoy 2022. And it's great to have you with us, Eva.
Thanks for having me, Barry.
So, you know, we talked last time, just in a general sense, with respect to the Freedom Convoy and how it's still an issue of discussion. It strikes me that the part of the thing that keeps this story going, and like you say, rightly so, is the fact that we had that Emergencies Act proclamation or invocation, and the Prime Minister really took a heavy hand against peaceful protesters. And yes, they were peaceful protesters and having a great time playing hockey on and having the bouncy castles and all the rest of it. I think it we saw a prime minister who certainly overreached and used a Emergencies Act that was meant to protect the country at if it were in utter peril for survival, as in a state of war or something of that nature. And yet it was used to combat a peaceful protest. And it seems that when we see the prime minister and the government then try to rationalize their use of that power, it really causes a lot of people to step back and say, hey, what on earth is going on here? I found it very troubling when I was listening to the government members, the Prime Minister and his cabinet, when they were at the Peace Order Emergency Commission a year ago, when they were talking about how the act was a old act. It was back in the 1980s. And so things have changed. And therefore, it seemed like there was this legal theory that was produced by those multitude of lawyers that the government has at their beck and call to come up with a rationale as to why the prime minister could use this against the protest. And that really scares me that we would have a bureaucracy and a government apparatus that would be willing to rationalize a decision that the prime minister made in that he wanted to have this power to combat the protest. And I'm really concerned that we have a mindset within government, the administrative state, the lawyers, that were like, yeah, you want to do this? Let's see how we can come up with a rationale to support you in this. Instead of saying, well, here's the law. No, you can't go against the law. You must stay within it. But instead, it seemed to me, now this is my judgment looking on, but it seemed to me that it was just this idea of how can we skirt around the law to get a political objective satisfied. Am I being overly concerned on that?
No, I actually think that if we were able to see the legal opinions, which we weren't, they would have said, what on earth do you think you're doing? But at the Public Emergency Commission inquiry, it was already too late. So the act was already invoked. So at that point, the lawyers were trying to, it wasn't skirting around the law. It's like, how are we going to make this look reasonable and justifiable to the commission? We have to. Because the evidence was clear, and this is super important. Number one, there were other laws that could have been used that weren't used. Number two, nobody request, none of the police authorities requested the Emergencies Act be invoked. Number three, CSIS actually said, do not invoke the Emergencies Act. It will cause more people to become more extreme because they're here because they're concerned about the government overreach. By invoking the Emergencies Act, you're going to escalate that issue. So you have that as evidence. And then and we weren't allowed to see any of the actual, the legal advice given by Lametti and the justice minister and his team. It was all redacted for client legal litigation privilege, solicitor client privilege, excuse me. Mm-hmm. And so I suspect that they said don't invoke it, but yeah. We don't have that information.
Yeah, I know. And the fact that we don't have that information is troubling in and of itself, because it strikes me that as a democratic society, we need to see that. We need to know what the thinking is of government in invoking such a powerful instrument.
I agree, Barry, but this is why I've created Empowered Canadians, because if we think there's a problem in how our government is being run and we don't say or do anything about it, we're going to continue to have the same government that we're asking for. So I completely agree that that was a big issue, and that there was a bit of a campaign on social media about that, and also about the Prime Minister and his cabinet getting the report early. And so Canadians got behind that. But if I agree, Canadians should have demanded, official opposition should have demanded that, but we haven't. Like, that's just kind of gone aside. People, like I was saying in our previous clip, people get in Canada outraged about something and then they sit down and don't do anything about it. And that's where, if we want to seriously take this democracy seriously, we have to take that second step and get involved, and then, like, you know, have the conversation with the MPs. Why didn't you ask for that when you get into government? Like, we're suspecting, obviously all the polls are showing that there's going to be quite a bit of a flip. There's an opportunity to ask those that are vying for these positions, what are your thoughts about that? What were your thoughts about the Emergencies Act? And my guess is Canadians just aren't going to have most of these conversations, but I'm hoping we're going to change that.
Right on. Yeah, and it's very much needed. And we need to encourage more people who have a mindset of holding government accountable to actually run for office. Now, I know, as Professor Pardee often refers to, and he says, well, you know, power corrupts. And Lord Acton always said, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And so the thing is that we have to encourage the average citizen, those of you right now who are listening, you're saying, okay, Barry, Eva, we're hearing all about the problems we have in this country. So what do we do? Well, get involved. And I think it's extremely important that people start signing up and get involved in all of the various government leadership positions, whether it's in your local city council or, you know, your municipal office or school boards or running for provincial office, federal office. We need to have people who are willing to ask uncomfortable questions, because this democracy will not survive unless we do.
Yeah,
and we've seen this, and it's so imperative to recognize that we all have that duty. And so your program, what you've just shared, is something that certainly is also in line with what we're hoping to be doing with First Freedoms. But we need to have people take seriously their civic responsibility. One of the things that Brian Peckford talks about a lot is that, look, there's not even any civics courses in classes very much anymore. And so that needs to change.
Yes. And so, you know, some people aren't comfortable running for elected office. And what I've come to realize, too, there's a huge structure around MLAs or MPPs in Ontario and MPs. There's whole constituency associations, and there's a direct line to your elected officials. That way, all they ask you to do is volunteer, come together, talk, to host a town hall, get involved with the community. And you could do that on a local level too. The other thing that I've been reminding people is there's only one area or level of government that you could speak directly to all of your elected officials. And that's at city council on a municipal level. You could go in there during one of their, you know, like not every debate or sitting, but there's a time for public participation and you could have your say about what's going on in your community. That, you know, every place is structured a bit differently. You can't do that at a provincial or a federal level, but you certainly can do that on a municipal level. So there's so many different opportunities to get involved, have your say, and start to build a relationship with these elected officials.
Yeah, we need boots on the ground. We need individuals who are going to speak up. Canadians, unfortunately, have had it's within our culture, our political culture, to be very, show a lot of deference to our elected officials. And I think we, if anything, that can be picked up from the experience with the Freedom Convoy is that, no, we've got to be willing to say enough's enough and be able to ask questions and be able to participate, as you rightly point out. And I think learning as with your courses that you mentioned is extremely important. So then that way you can understand and not feel intimidated when people use language and jargon that it's almost unheard of in the common parlance that the politicians speak. But we need to get educated. And I think it's extremely important. We almost need a Duolingo for civics courses in Canada kind of thing, you know.
So that's what I am hoping that's what I'm providing. And I should have a book on civics coming out in the new year, which really was part of the course. So I was preparing handouts for every week of the course. And then I just thought, I think this is something Canadians need. So I'm packaging it together right now and hoping that that's going to be available in the new year. So you could flip through it on the weekend or when you have some free time and just understand this system we have a little bit better.
Oh, that's awesome. That is great work. That, you know, that's extremely important. And so it's great that you have taken that on, and it's what we need. There's no question about it. We absolutely need it. And that's exciting to hear. Another thought that's been going through my mind as well, and just I'm curious as to what you think of what's been happening in the courts. I'm very disappointed in the way the jurisprudence has gone, not only with respect to the various issues dealing with freedom on the COVID-19 experience, but in general, just recently I saw that there was a individual who wanted to speak out at a school board meeting. We had a decision here just the other day. In fact, I'm just gonna just have a look at it here real quick. It was the decision came down actually November 29, and it involved the issue of the Waterloo Region District School Board. It was an Ontario Divisional Court decision in which Caroline Berzowski wanted to make some presentation. And anyhow, as she was speaking, the chair decided to stop her presentation, and then she brought a judicial review. So here's an individual, his speaking up. And then when they go to court, the court rules in favor of the chairman of the school board and so on. The court awards costs against her. So it would almost seem like the courts are not all that excited about people speaking up and challenging and being involved, because here we got a punishment of costs. And
who took
and
that the court one to makes, court?
You mean who?
It must have been her.
Or your
no, or? Just she brought that.
It was Carolyn.
So this is the thing: is it's hard to comment on a particular case like that. You know, whether the challenge was appropriate or maybe not argued well. I don't know. I do from some of the cases I've seen is that it goes back to what we were saying the last time is not that many lawyers spoke up. And I've been asking this question for the last 2 years now, whose fault is it? Is it the judiciary that they're just, you know, not taking a firmer stand? Is it the lawyers because they didn't step up? Is it citizens because they haven't, you know, they weren't that involved? Or informed, or is it the elected officials? I think in the end, it's a bit of a combination of all, but maybe the biggest, where I'll put the biggest responsibility and failure would be on the media, because it is their actual job to hold the government to account. And not only did they not do that, they basically did the opposite too. It's like they just misinformed, lied to everyone. And you know, perpetuated.
Yeah, I'm sorry, you broke up there. You said that you'd put the biggest weight on.
I think the media in the end, but it's a combination of everyone too. Oh. You know.
Yeah. I'm just like, I guess the thought that's going through my mind is the a lot of the decisions coming out of courts makes a lot of or gives a lot of deference to administrative actors, and it strikes me that there's a bit of a tendency that way.
Yeah, and so, but there always has been a deference to administrative tribunals. So if you want to change that, you know, yeah, that's a much bigger change to make. So I don't know what to say about that, because every case is different too.
True. But I also think that the takeaway is that because the courts are having that and wanting to give deference to the administrative actors, it becomes then important to deal with these issues from a political level. In other words, an involvement level of trying to deal with the issues on the local level, whereas going to court may not necessarily be the way in which you bring about change, I guess.
100%.
My takeaway. Yeah.
Yes. And I think that's such an important part and point to make, Barry, because not only is it the more appropriate place, but it's also cheaper and quicker. And so as a lawyer too, you go to court, it's always 50-50, and then there's costs and all of that, but the process is long. And that's another thing that I've noticed over this time is it's like everyone was waiting for some lawyer to, or lawyers or some a trucker to come along, somebody to save the day for everyone else. But nobody was willing to just be like, okay, we have a problem, let's all get together. And one example I've been giving more recently is Matt, Mothers Against Drunk Driving. Like if we think about that for a minute too, like how crazy was it that it wasn't elected officials that came and said, or the lawyers that did anything on that. It was mothers said, enough is enough. We're not going to have our kids dying in drunk driving accidents anymore. And they became sophisticated, strategic, and they did something about it. And here, like I'm saying too, we're just like somebody else. I'm just going to complain and be mad about this. But that's a perfect example with, the person trying to make a statement at their council meeting. Why wasn't everyone up in arms about that? That a woman who's paying the city council, she's a taxpayer, paying property taxes or whatever in her city, you know, you should be able to get the people rallying behind you and saying, I want to speak. She should be able to speak at that meeting. Like, what are you doing here? Do you know what democracy is? Let's talk about that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's where we need as a country to come to, where we need to have that. The first reaction is not simply to back away, because it's almost like, well, we'd like for here's an example. So when the truck during the trucker convoy, when the government then ended up going against anybody who made donations to the convoy, they froze their bank accounts. And then that created a chill. Now, they didn't freeze everybody's bank accounts, but they did it enough so that everyone now had a chill. They weren't going now to donate. And I've had a lot of discussions with different groups who are involved in the freedom movement. And one of the things they've noted to me is that since that happened, donations have gone way down because people are afraid that government is following where they're putting their money. And so the point is that there are individuals who are willing to stand up and speak, but people will watch and see what happens and whether or not if they get knocked down, well, we don't really want to get too involved because there may be a personal cost, in other words. It's extremely important for people to be willing to make those sacrifices to speak, but do so in a way in which you're educated, do so in a way in which you're respectful, in a way that you are reasonable. And it's not just simply, you know, jumping up and down and waving your hands. It's no, engage in the dialogue. And that's one of the things that I really appreciate about Empowered Canadians, what you're doing. There is this importance of reasonable dialogue, and I think we have lost that in a big way over the last number of years.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, if you're scared now, you know, where is it going to take us later? In Ottawa, mm-hmm. Keith and I were always joking, like, CSIS, if you're listening, what you're listening, we didn't care. Like, we weren't engaging in anything nefarious. As far as we saw, there was nothing criminal going on. We're like, listen in to how, you know, reasonable and ordinary these Canadians are. And if you allow that fear to, you know, take over you, of course, it's not going to be good. But as long as, you know, you're abiding by the law, challenging the government is a healthy thing, and we should never be afraid of it.
Excellent. Great point. Well, I see our time is gone again. I just want to thank you again, Eva. I'm wondering if you would have a final thought that you'd like to share with our listeners.
Well, just going on that too, a reminder is that in a healthy democracy, we have to challenge the government. We have to ask questions. We have to be able to have open and respectful dialogue. Another thing, speaking of Brian Peckford, which we've mentioned a few times, is he's put it very simply, democracy is hard, 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 hard work. So let's not expect this is easy. Let's not think that, you know, I'll just say something here online or make one complaint and my job here is done. No. That's just the start. You see an issue like Matt, Mothers Against Drunk Driving. Let's start to get together. Let's start to get strategic. Let's start to get coordinated. If you have an issue, find 5 people, 10 people, 100 people and work together on how you can affect change. If 10 people don't agree with you, maybe you are in the fringe minority and maybe that's not the issue we should be tackling today. But if your numbers start to grow and your cause starts to grow, you're on to something and there's a reason people are involved. And then how awesome is that, that you get to spark something like that? So I hope we can do this because I also hear a lot of people are saying, oh, it all needs to come down and then we have to build it up again. And then what? You don't think it's going to be the same if people aren't involved? Yeah. History does repeat itself. So, you know, the pendulum swings. Either pull up your socks and get to work, or you're going to have to do it later anyway. So,
no, absolutely. And I think Jordan Peterson makes a great point about the important thing to remember is that we need our civic institutions. we need not to tear them down, but we need to ensure that we are involved in our institutions so that they work properly.
Yes. And there's so many opportunities. I'm learning myself as to all of the opportunities that are available and so much of the direct access you can have to elected officials. Like, they run on volunteers, on donations, on polls. So there's so many opportunities to get involved. If you're just writing in one letter every 4 years complaining about everything, or, you know, maybe not even complaining and good legitimate complaints, maybe you might not get an answer, but there's so many opportunities to get involved and be part of all of this stuff. So I think like you said with Jordan Peterson, we need them too. Like, we'd be starting from scratch again anyway.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we owe it to those who were before us to ensure that today we can live in civil peace, and also encouraged that the next generations would be able to learn the lessons of the past. And certainly in the last little while here in Canada, we've learned a lot, or we should learn a lot from what we've experienced. Eva, I just want to thank you so very much for the great service that you are doing to this, for this country. And I just encourage you to keep up the good work. And again, where can people reach you?
Thank you so much for that. And to find Empowered Canadians, you could go to empoweredcanadians.ca, and we're on most of the social media platforms and something Empowered Canadians, basically. So, and we're just starting, so we'll continue to grow. And I hope we can keep producing information and elevating the conversation and really getting people engaged.
Excellent. Well, thank you. And folks, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to be with us today. Encourage you to like and subscribe to our channel, and ensure that you take the opportunity to be involved and make a difference. Until next time, I'm Barry Bussey. The fight for freedom consists not only in the legal battles in court, but also in the battle of ideas at the universities and in the media. It takes time, effort, and money to keep on top of the debates for freedom. Your donation allows us to keep fighting for all Canadians. firstfreedoms.ca.